The majority of adults in the United States take one or more dietary supplements daily or occasionally. And by dietary supplement, I mean things like vitamins, minerals, herbals, botanicals, amino acids, and enzymes. Popular herbs include echinacea and garlic, minerals, commonly iron or calcium, B vitamins and vitamin D are commonly supplemented, and then there are specialty products like glucosamine, probiotics, and omega-3 oils. Are there safeguards to their use, and how can you tell if they're effective? Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Supplements can be taken as tablets, capsules and powders, or as additives in drinks, shakes or energy bars. They can be taken for the maintenance of good health or just when sickness strikes. Like Nathan, who suddenly found himself acutely ill.
I was driving home late one night. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. I'd been working late, which had become a bad habit of mine. I was driving home from the office and I felt intense pain in my lower left back. I felt so bad that I thought I might need to turn around and go to the hospital, and I actually did begin to turn around, and I thought, oh, I don't want to deal with a medical expense and I don't need to go to the emergency room. I'll just go home and weather this storm on my own. So I continued to drive home, and as I was getting closer to home, I actually had to pull over because I thought I was going to vomit. And there I was, standing outside of my car, feeling this pain. I didn't vomit, and I was able to finally, after a few minutes, get back into my car and make the rest of the drive home. When I got home, I couldn't sleep at all that night, and I did end up becoming very, very ill. I literally thought I was going to die. I'd never experienced pain close to that before. Once before, when I was traveling in the Middle East, I had food poisoning, and I thought that was the worst I'd ever felt. And I literally prayed, God, if I don't get well, please let me die because I can't take this pain. This time the pain was worse, and I was praying, God, I can't die. I have a wife and kids to think about. So it was really the worst thing I'd ever experienced. I went to the next, got through the night without sleeping. The next morning I did go to the hospital, and it was determined that I'd developed a kidney stone. It was between 6 and 7 millimeters, and it was blocking the ureter at the top of the kidney. So my kidney was enlarging at the top of the ureter, rather, and the doctor told me I had a swollen kidney about 20 to 30% larger than normal size, and that's what was causing that terrible pain. Well, looking back, I realized that some of the things I was doing in my lifestyle contributed to this, most likely. One of them was those late nights, or sometimes pulling all-nighters in order to try to catch up on work. I had a friend who told me that when I do stay up, she was aware that I'd been staying up and pulling all-nighters sometimes. She said that's very taxing on the kidneys, and her words were ringing in my ears as I was going through this now. I was given some medication, 4 different prescriptions at the emergency room, and sent home and told to screen my urine and see if I would pass a stone. The next day, it was a Friday, I ended up back in the emergency room again in terrible pain, and at that point they admitted me, and I spent the weekend in the hospital.
And that was just the beginning. Don't miss the rest of Nathan's story on today's show, along with a delicious dessert, an exercise spot, plus, how safe and effective are dietary supplements? We'll hear what today's expert has to say, but first up, the news. In the headlines today, chelation therapy, diabetes and heart attacks, natural products injure the liver, and caffeine-laced underwear refunded. A new secondary analysis of the trial to assess chelation therapy has shown that people who have had a heart attack can subsequently benefit from chelation therapy. The 5-year study looked at people over 50 years old who've already had a heart attack when they started EDTA chelation and multi-mineral and vitamin therapy. There were 40 to 50% fewer cardiovascular events and deaths in patients with diabetes, but no difference was found for those without diabetes. This study was supported by the NIH National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine and the National Heart, Lung and Blood Institute, and was published in the journal Circulation. A recent study suggested that antimicrobial agents, primarily antibiotics, were the most common cause of idiosyncratic drug-induced liver injury. And the next most common? Herbal and dietary supplements. When Korean researchers analysed liver injury with herbal medicine exposure, they found concurrent use of conventional drugs in every case. In another study, the use of calcium and iron supplements affected HIV medication levels when taken within 2 hours of each other. So always let your doctor know if you use herbal or dietary supplements, and if they prescribe you a drug, remind them again. The Federal Trade Commission's Bureau of Consumer Protection has investigated two companies who have agreed to refund about $1.5 million to their customers. These retailers claimed that wearing their underwear infused with caffeine and other substances would break down fat, leading to substantial weight loss and the elimination of cellulite. They had no evidence to back up their claims, therefore were accused of deceptive advertising. This is in line with FDA recommendations on the horizon that claims made by dietary supplement manufacturers must be backed by evidence. And by the way, if you want to lose weight, the most natural way is to eat a healthy diet and be physically active. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. On today's show, I'm joined by Dan Fabricant, who has a PhD in pharmacognosy, which is the study of natural products. He's currently the CEO of the Natural Products Association, having finished 3 years as a division director at the FDA. Some people are sceptical about whether we really need to be taking nutritional supplements. After all, in developed countries, we have such a wide choice of food options. Surely we're covering all the nutritional bases. Or are we? Here's Dr. Fabricant's opinion.
Well, most studies show that Americans don't get the necessary 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, so I think that for a lot of people there is room in the diet for making sure they get their full range of nutrients from a supplement. So there's also other reasons people may be involved in sporting activities, things like that, where they're looking to replace what they lose. So I think that really, you know, there's a way to do it and do it wisely.
And as you say, people are not eating correctly. That the ideal would be to have them to eat correctly, but if they just don't do that.
Well, I think with all the crunches we have on our time these days, I mean, it's, you know, people have more and more crammed in a daily basis, whether we're running from this meeting to that meeting on our smartphones, it's tougher and tougher, I think, to eat and prepare meals. So also people, you know, commute further than they have before. So it makes it a little more of a challenge, and it's an easy way to get kind of the insurance in your diet, if you will, that you're getting all your nutrients.
Right. Now, it's been said to me that cutting the front lawn and expecting it to have medicinal properties is just crazy. So I took that as being a criticism that herbals, botanicals are just not effective.
Well, I think it's a criticism that you shouldn't eat your grass. But I think that there's a lot of historical use of botanicals, traditional medicines. There's a lot of good clinical studies. If people go to sources like clinicaltrials.gov, they can see the numerous studies that have been conducted on botanicals in very rigorous scientific environments. And I think that, you know, they should inform themselves with that information. Obviously, talk to their healthcare practitioner before using a botanical. But there's a lot of good science on what botanicals can do for you.
As a healthcare practitioner, if a patient came to, well, I keep myself informed of herbs, but most of my colleagues, if they were to be approached by someone and asked about a botanical, that healthcare professional would have probably very limited information about it and would therefore say, don't take it, because they don't know. So that's a real challenge for people, isn't it?
It is, but there's a shift in a lot of medical schools where they are arming new physicians with complementary and alternative medicine training, as well as for their CEUs. There's a lot of complementary and alternative trainings. And they can go to resources like our association's website, or some of the federal government has some great information at NIH. So there's a lot out there for people to look at.
Now, another criticism is that there's a sense that there's a lack of regulation around natural products. Now, you've worked for the industry, you've worked for government. What would you say to that?
Well, I think it's different. I think people see a pill and they think it's regulated like a medicine. It's not. It's an article of food. These are things that have been in the diet, and so in a common sense manner, they're regulated as a food. During my time at the agency, I can tell you there was plenty of regulatory authority. We took away millions of dollars of products off the shelves. Some people even went to jail. So I think if you ask them whether or not the industry was regulated, they might have a different opinion.
After the break, it's time for a treat. But first, this.
I love the red candy.
Did you know red dye causes diarrhea, headaches, and even cancer?
What? Well, no more red dye for me. But that's not a problem because I love the blue ones as well.
Well, I hate to tell you, that causes hyperactivity and in children, ADHD.
What are you talking about? So what is there that I can eat that's pleasurable?
There are lots of great tasting foods that are even good for you.
And how do you know the difference?
The closer to nature, the better.
So these candies that are highly refined are probably dubious?
Well, did you ever see candy fall off a tree?
No, I can't say I have.
And likewise, did you ever see anyone dig Burger Coke and fries out of the garden?
No, you certainly don't.
Well, you remember the saying, if God made it,
eat it.
If man made it,
read it.
And if you can't read it, don't eat it. So if it's food as grown, then it's good for you.
So all the binding, grinding, and refining and adding all those chemical colorings and additives are not very good for you?
Eee, terrible chemistry. Instead, have red strawberries, red raspberries, red plums, and red apples. Doctor's orders. Welcome back to Go Healthy's Kitchen, and Phil's with us today. Phil, you've got a really special recipe.
Yes, it's one that I don't get to make at home very often because my wife is very allergic to bananas.
Oh no!
Yeah, we found a way to work around it, and when I come to places like this, I get to make it and show it to others. So it's kind of a fun thing that I get to do.
Great.
So I'm going to introduce you to banana cashew pudding.
Mmm, sounds interesting. Sounds like it's got bananas and cashews in it.
It does.
What else has it got in it?
Basically, we're going to start with two bananas cut into chunks, a cup and a half of cashew cream, and I'll show you how to make that, 3 tablespoons pure maple syrup, 1 tablespoon of orange juice, and just a pinch of salt.
Mmm, so that sounds really simple. So how do we make the cashew cream?
The cashew cream takes a little bit of time, but that also is very simple. Mm. So basically, you're going to take 2 cups of raw cashews, you're going to add them to 8 cups of boiling water, and you're going to let that sit for just about 6 to 8 hours. So you just kind of take it, set it aside, and then what we're gonna need to do is blend it with about 1/3 to 1/2 cup of cold water for about 5 minutes until it's smooth. So that's our cashew cream.
Now you could make that ahead of time, presumably. You just put it in a jar, keep it in the fridge. So then you could just churn this out whenever you felt like it.
Exactly, and if you do it ahead of time, it makes this much easier, so you can just kind of do it all at once and you'll be done.
Mmm, all right.
So while I put these in the blender and start mixing these up, I'm going to have you cut us some bananas.
These bananas could be a little bit more ripe. It's good to have bananas that are a little bit spotty, but it's always hard to get them in the store. They don't ripen for you, that's for sure.
And do you know why that is?
No.
Bananas actually ripen better when you take them off the tree. And so they usually pick them well before they're ripe, not only so that they can store, but because that just makes it a little bit easier for the bananas to ripen.
Is that right? Well, in Australia, which is the nearest place that we grow bananas commercially, they put a blue bag around the bunch of bananas, which speeds up ripening. On the vine, so, or on the palm, I guess it's called. Yeah.
And that actually works with a lot of different fruits, to put it into a brown bag or something like that, that gets it ripening sooner.
That's true.
So we're basically just gonna mix all this together. Sometimes you just need to give it a little bit of help.
That cashew cream is very thick, isn't it?
It's very thick. And that's where the maple syrup kind of helps to not only help you mix it, but also gives it a little bit of a sweeter flavor. And you've actually already pureed the cashew cream, so it's really just a matter of mixing it together.
And getting those bananas to mince up, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, that looks beautiful. Okay.
Now, did you know the scientific name for banana is translated something like wise man fruit?
Really? I'll have to eat more.
Exactly.
It's one of my favorites. So, should we make this awesome?
We're going to make this awesome. You can garnish it with a couple of cashews, an orange wedge, and then we've even caramelized some bananas.
Ooh-hoo. Oh, look at that. I'll give that to you so you can do the biz. Yep. Wow, that looks gorgeous. Dying to taste this. Wow. He's really done us proud today.
You're going to want to serve this at your next gathering.
Definitely.
It's healthy and delicious.
Yeah, lots of cashews and no saturated fats in this dessert.
Mm. And I love because you can taste the ingredients. It has a really good flavor. It's very sweet, and you know that it's not loaded with sugar. It's not processed. It's not all of that. You've made it yourself.
Mmm. Perfect. The only sweetener, artificial sweetener, or processed sweetener, I guess, is the maple syrup. But, oh, that is so good. You must try it. Definitely a keeper. What a yummy treat. In the first segment, Nathan was admitted to the hospital with severe pain from kidney stones.
They did have to place a stent to allow my kidney to drain, to allow the urine to pass beyond the stone and into the ureter, into the bladder. So that stent was in place then for, it turned out to be 2 months. At that point, it was determined that they should try lithotripsy to break up the stone. I was told prior to this by everyone I'd spoken to in the medical community that there's nothing you can do, natural methods don't work to dissolve or decrease the size of kidney stones, but I thought, why not? I'm going to try it anyway. So when the lithotripsy was scheduled about a month later, I was actually told from the x-ray as they viewed it, they said that the stone that was causing the problem was now about 1 millimeter smaller in diameter than it had been before. So I thought that was indicative that something I was doing was helping. They did perform the lithotripsy, and that did not have an effect that they were looking for. It didn't break up the stone. They said at most it may have changed the stone's shape a little bit, but it didn't break it up. I was not able to pass the stone naturally, and so I was told that they would need to go in and remove it. They did so 2 months later, and then when the doctor was there, he removed that stone and went around with the scope and said he saw nothing anywhere in the kidneys at all. Before this, I had done a kidney and bladder flush and cleanse with using natural herbal products, and that seemed to have been, I think, a helpful thing, and I'll tell you why in a bit. Because the doctor said he saw no stones, and I thought, great, apparently, because they said there were several stones in my left kidney prior to that, and now he couldn't find any, and I thought, well, maybe they've dissolved or they've passed or whatever, but I didn't find any when I was screening my urine. As it turned out, I was given a temporary stent because of the swelling that would occur from removing the permanent one, and that was removed a couple of days later. About a half hour after I removed that, they placed one that I could remove myself, and after I removed that, I began to feel intense pain. And I thought, what could this be? Since he said there were no more stones there, what's going on? Did I damage my kidney or something when I removed the stent? About 3 hours after that, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, I passed 5 kidney stones. And then at 6 o'clock in the morning, I passed a 6th one. Of course, my urologist was interested in knowing if I'm using any medicines or products at the time. I shared with him what I was doing, the herbs I was using, and he was fine with that. He said that he just needed to know what I was doing. And so we stayed in communication on that, and he was interested to see how it impacted my health. I do believe that the herbal cleanse and flush that I did allowed my kidneys to get to that point where they were finally able to eliminate those stones, and I passed them. It's been several months now. I just recently had another checkup with the doctor, and he said there's no indication that there's any new stones forming, and all is well.
And it seems that natural products contributed to that happy outcome. Our guest today is Dan Fabricant, who is the director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the US Food and Drug Administration for 3 years and has recently become the CEO of the Natural Products Association, or NPA. I asked him to tell us about the NPA.
NPA, Natural Products Association, is the oldest and largest trade association in the natural product industry. We represent about 800 manufacturers and 1,200 retailers, making up about 10,000 storefronts of natural products, so dietary supplements, natural organic foods, natural personal care, really the if you will, to pardon a bad pun, the roots of the industry, kind of the independent health food retailer is where the organization started and grew out of there to merge with the manufacturers as well. So we really have the whole community all the way through the supply chain to the consumer, which is very powerful because I think consumers really want to have the ability to get healthy products that they can do something in a day in, day out basis to really feel good about themselves.
And what do you do for your members?
Quite a bit. Our primary function is advocacy, making sure that consumers have access to natural products, that there aren't laws or regulations that are unfair or unfavorable to the business community. But also, we do quite a bit of educating, making sure they know what they can and can't say about products, what quality manufacturing is, really all the way through the regulatory components, in addition to we have some certification programs as well. We defined natural a few years ago, so consumers see natural in the marketplace. And if you ask 10 people what natural is, you'll get 11 different opinions.
Absolutely.
So it's an area where we really wanted to give some real structure so the consumer felt like they weren't being duped in the marketplace.
So how do you define natural?
Very carefully. I think both by process and by ingredients, making sure that the processes are kitchen chemistry, and not that that's unsophisticated or anti-technology, but, really kitchen chemistry like master chefs, they know if you heat something up too fast, like chocolate per se, it doesn't keep the consistency you like. So really learning how to work with nature in that capacity, and then also depending on plant-based ingredients, not petroleum-based ingredients, just things that you're going to find in the jungle, and really make sure those are used instead of petroleum. No one wants to think about a 55-gallon drum of light sweet crude oil when they're putting on, putting their children's sunscreen on or something like that. So,
right. Now, you switched from working with NPA, mm-hmm. then going to work as a government mm-hmm. regulator, and now back to the industry. Was that difficult for you?
It's had some unique challenges, but in by and large, it's the same function. I think both the industry, at least the trade association, responsible industry, and the agency want consumers to have access to safe products. So in a lot of ways, the mission is very similar. There are some challenges, but at the same time, I think it's been very good for me because I can speak both languages, and I think it's a great way to get people together and communicating, regulator and industry. They both need each other.
Right. Why did you come back to industry?
It was really, I care deeply about the mission of this association. I think it has a great story to tell and really brings the whole community together. So I was very proud of my time at the agency, accomplished quite a bit, and felt like this was the right place and the right time.
Great. Now tell us, how does a manufacturer bring a product to market, a natural product? We know that if a pharmaceutical company, were to bring a drug to market, there's a huge mm-hmm. testing process, clinical trials, and all of that. What about a natural product?
Sure. Well, there are some basic steps. There's some record keeping you have to do. You have to register your facility with the federal government. If it's a new ingredient, you have to do something that's called a new dietary ingredient notification. So you have to notify the government that you're going to put this new ingredient in the marketplace. They have 75 days to review that ingredient and see if they, see if you met your regulatory compliance. From there, if you're going to make a product, it has to be compliant with good manufacturing practices, similar to pharmaceuticals. So you you have to meet minimal quality standards. We want all our members to exceed that far and away. And you've got to have certain labeling requirements. The label has to be truthful, not misleading, and really convey what's there in the product to the consumer. So those are some of the things manufacturers have to do before going to market.
So that raises some of the issues, some of the dangers, some of the pitfalls for consumers going out and looking at natural products. So let's start with quality.
Sure.
If I go and buy a can of beans, I know it's probably been through some quality control process. Can I say the same about natural products that I buy off the shelf?
Oh, gosh, yes, even more so. Unlike that can of beans, with that can of beans, you may know how many calories are there and things like that, but do you know the specific components that are there? For dietary supplements, you're required to test and make sure that those specific components are there. So if you had a bean extract, per se, in a dietary supplement, and it was standardized to a given component, well, that component would have to be within a certain range and tested and made sure it was in a certain range, as well as the sorts of sanitary controls you have for foods.
What about accurate labeling? You mentioned, you know, sort of, is it true to label? What? If I'm buying, let's say I'm buying vitamin D and it says 4,000 international units, is it likely that there is 4,000? Could it be 3,000 or 7,000? And if it's 3,000, I'm getting ripped off. If it's 7,000, I could be overdosing. So how sure can I be?
By law, it's got to be, if it says it on the label, it's got to be there 100% of the time through the life cycle of the product. So if the product has an expiration date, it's got to meet that label claim till that expiration date. So that's a requirement both in the labeling laws as well as the good manufacturing practices, where the FDA actually goes into firms and inspects them and makes sure that firms have the sort of data that supports that it's going to have 4,000 units in that case through the life of the product.
And how often might there be spot checks on a company, on a manufacturer?
Quite frequently, and it depends on the firm's regulatory history. If the firm's had problems, they're probably going to get visited by the agency a little more than firms that haven't had problems. But that's the agency is required to visit firms now with the Food Safety Modernization Act at least every 7 years. For some commodities, it'll be once every 5 years. So those are kind of the general parameters for all categories of food.
Mm. Now, when it comes to the question of whether a product is effective or not, we're in a little bit of a blind spot, because if that product is not registered with the FDA as a drug, then limited health claims can be made. Mm-hmm. So if I have a cold and I go to the health store and I want to buy something for my cold, it's not everything will be able to tell me whether it's effective for a cold. Not all the labels will be there, right?
Well, that's exactly right. Dietary supplements aren't there to treat, cure, mitigate a disease, even a cold or flu. So if you have a cold or flu, you should certainly see your doctor first and foremost. Now, if you want to do something to strengthen your immune system, there are a lot of great studies on a lot of ingredients in terms of strengthening immune system. But dietary supplements are not allowed by law to claim to cure, treat, or mitigate a disease, including cold or flu.
And that's why the labeling is sometimes frustratingly vague. But remember that the regulation works in our favor for our safety. When we come back, Sean will be here to get us moving. But before that, consider this. Since sin, the human body has been declining in many ways. Yet God has provided some wonderful scientific discoveries, including those that combat disease. Some of those discoveries have been around for thousands of years, including herbal medicines and natural products. They're even mentioned in the Bible. One of my favorite quotes comes from Ezekiel 47:12, where God promises that in the Promised Land, His children will find all kinds of trees whose fruit is nutritious and whose leaves are for medicine. You see, before modern medicines, God designed that leaves, roots, flowers, and seeds would be used for healing. With their long history of use comes the knowledge of how and when to use them, which ones are dangerous and which ones are useless. So it could be that they're safer than some of the modern medicines that man has designed today. Of course, we need to intelligently apply all appropriate modalities. But when I have a mild illness, I start with a natural product that will support my body's healing. Did God know what He was doing when He designed those leaves, roots, flowers, and seeds? You bet He did. They're not just beautiful, He called them medicine. You know how important exercise is, so get off the sofa. Sean's here. What have you got for us, Sean?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good to see you. All right, what we're going to do to warm up today is almost, it's called a lunge, all right? But we're going to do an alternating lunge starting right here, and we're going to go a reverse lunge, all right? We're going to switch it up a little bit, all right? All right. Take your chest up, and we're just going to go back. Now you can set the timer for about 15 seconds and just take your time bringing your knee as far down as you can. The reason why is because you're preparing your quads for exercise.
Right.
And the next exercise, you see, I just went off balance. The next exercise, right, will involve some of your quads, okay? So do that for about 30 seconds, 15 to 30 seconds. What we have here is a kettlebell, which you can get at any store, varying weights from very light to very heavy, and just your standard dumbbells. What we're gonna do today is our kettlebell swings, and just a great core exercise, works your quads, your core, your arms, and everything. So I want you to grab onto those, all right? And as if you're gonna do a squat, squat down all the way, and I want you to swing. So I want you to go back first and come up, stand up, right? And just stand up. What I want you to really think about is pushing your hips forward, all right? Every time you push your hip forward, I want you to squeeze your glutes. There you go, don't hit me, right? Right, there you go. Squeeze your glutes.
So very intentional about the standing up.
Absolutely. The faster you stand up and the further you push your hips forward, the higher the weight goes.
Right.
And you do not have to use your arms.
No.
So this is called a swing.
Yeah.
Okay. Great exercise, total body exercise, burns tons of calories. All right. And
that's what we want.
Two and one. Perfect. Boom. I caught it. Oh, that's 100 pounds.
Oh, it is.
The next one is I love combination exercise. And I'll demonstrate this so you can get a little break and catch your breath. Remember we did the reverse lunge.
Right.
Now, we're doing the reverse lunge. At the same time, we're incorporating some of the upper body. Again, burning as much calories as possible.
Right.
All right.
And so making our time really count.
There you go. So it's a bit of balance. We're working the delt, all right, and the quad. The
slower and when you're using balance, you're working your core.
Absolutely. So here it is again. Every time you have an opportunity to go down here, you come up, bring the chest up, work your delts, and breathe. This is no rush. You're working two regions of the body. Blood is flowing from the upper to the lower.
And remember to keep breathing.
There you go.
It's really important to keep
breathing. So that's me. You want to try it?
Sure.
That's called a reverse lunge with a deltoid raise. Now go about parallel to the ground. There you go. Give me two more. One. That looks good. And two. Perfect. There you go. So that is a great total body exercise because you work in two areas at the same time.
Super.
And this one is a squat with a bicep curl. All right, you can use this one.
Oh, all right.
So squat down as low as you can. And I want you to put your arms right down the middle. And I just want you to bicep curl. There you go. Now, we're working those quads again. All right.
Ooh.
The quads are on fire.
They are.
Right?
They're gonna be on fire any moment. My scrubs are going to be light.
And then you're fully extending your bicep all the way down, working your quads, your entire core to keep your chest up, and your biceps.
Right.
Three, two.
This is a real burn.
And one.
I hope you're trying this with me.
I hope so. All right, so there you go. Three exercises. Choose a time, choose the amount of reps, have some fun, and then you got to cool down.
We got to cool down.
My favorite exercise of all right? Just to relax, open and close. Just open and close. Make sure you're breathing. Take a nice deep breath in your nose and exhale. Bring that heart rate down, regulate the body, and you're done.
Great. Thanks, Sean. That was
great. Very welcome.
Are you considering learning a new sport? It could be a huge advantage. Recent research found that men who improved their physical fitness reduced their chance of death by 44%. Middle-aged and older men who began a moderately vigorous sports activity like cycling, soccer, basketball, or hiking lived longer. They also have lower rates of death from heart disease. It is time to get off the bench. Taking up a new sport is another ageless advantage.
Now for the questions I've received from you via Facebook, text, email, and phone. Thomas called. I use garlic capsules or eat elephant garlic for my blood pressure. Why don't doctors use garlic to treat blood pressure instead of medications? Well, number of reasons, but doctors are trained in pharmacology, not herbology or pharmacognosy. And they know that medicines usually work, they're simple to take, and most times that's what people are expecting from their doctor. Also, that's what healthcare providers are paid to deliver. Some forms of garlic are affected, others are not, and so you need to know what you're doing with them. And if you prefer natural products, then see a naturopath But first see your doctor, get the tests, the diagnosis, and then see the naturopath and get a review and make a choice as to whether you want natural treatments or medications that you wouldn't necessarily have to pay for because your insurance would cover them. Someone else wrote, as a text, I'm caring for my mum who's aged 98. She's on liquid supplements. Is there a supplement I can make or purchase to help her gain weight? Well, you need to think about the ability of her digestive tract to break down and absorb the nutrients that she is already taking. Often an elderly person has less stomach acid, lower levels of digestive enzymes, and they can often benefit from having those things supplemented along with what they're already eating. But also get a nutritionist to review her nutrition and see if there's any suggestions that they have. Someone else called, I have gout. Is there anything I can do to prevent the flares? I seem to get them all the time. Well, common triggers for gout are animal protein, spinach, and dehydration. So drink 8 to 10 glasses of water a day, remove animal protein from your diet. You might want to think about becoming vegetarian, and avoid spinach. Now, the other leafy greens are fine. The other thing you could add is a tablespoon of cherry juice every day. Doesn't have to be fresh, it can be frozen and defrosted, whichever way you like to take it. That can halve the number of flares that you get. Well, thanks for those questions. Keep sending them. Now let's go shopping. Garlic has been used as both food and medicine in many cultures for thousands of years, dating back to the time of the pyramids. During both world wars, soldiers were given garlic to prevent gangrene. It's loaded with antioxidants, which helps to destroy free radicals. Free radicals contribute to the aging process, to DNA damage, to heart disease and cancer. Garlic's been used to lower blood pressure, cholesterol, cancer, antibiotics, antivirals, and it's anti-inflammatory. Wow. Its pungent odor is due to the large amount of sulfur it contains, and that double sulfur bond gives it a unique property. It absorbs toxins. So remember to include garlic to your lineup of seasonings and make some garlic bread. Bon appetit. Our guest today has more than a decade of research and practical experience with natural products. Dan Fabricant has been Assistant Director of Research at ConsumerLab.com, overseeing efforts to evaluate and identify quality dietary supplements and coordinate independent laboratory testing. I asked him what should cause a consumer to be suspicious about the authenticity of a product.
Well, I think when you see something that claims to act like a drug or as good as a drug, that should be a red flag for consumers. When they see that, if it sounds too good to be true, kind of the old razor there, I think holds really, really true. If people are looking for a result, and usually it's in the weight loss areas or bodybuilding areas, in some cases even sexual enhancement areas, that it's as good as a drug or performs like a drug, they ought to stay away from a product like that.
Why do you say stay away? What's the risk of using that kind of product?
Well, there are a few risks. The first risk is it probably, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. I think all of our, you know, our parents taught us that. But I think with specific categories, like the weight loss category and the sexual enhancement category, people have actually spiked dietary supplements or drugs. When they do that, they're no longer dietary supplements, they're unapproved drugs. But I think when they see those sorts of claims on those specific products, they ought to take care. You know, there shouldn't be drugs in any category of food.
So we're talking about tainted products that have slipped in under the radar.
Yeah, I mean, and these are firms, this is criminal activity. So these are folks that, you know, it's drug trafficking in a lot of ways, no different than, you know, drug trafficking we see in the streets and things like that. So similarly, people should take heed and be, you know, be concerned. We're very concerned as an industry. We want the practice to stop, and we want strong enforcement by the agency to really drive those folks out of doing any, you know, having any sort of influence on people who are going to take dietary supplements.
And are those products more likely to be imported or rather than made in America, or are they either?
Well, I think there's been some very good news stories about it. There was one in the New York Times a few years ago by Natasha Singer where she went to mail facility at JF Kennedy Airport and really saw that a lot of it was imported. And, you know, these are things that, you know, similar to drugs being brought in the country, illegal drugs, it really tends to go through the borders and the ports and things like that. So it's something of concern.
Now, many people think if it's natural, it's safe. Is that really so?
Well, I think they want to believe it's natural, safe. I think compared to synthetic chemicals, which we've had less exposure to over time, they do overall have a better safety record, safety trend. But I think, you know, if you are going to use something to maintain your health, you want to take the same precautions you would take for any product to maintain your health. Talk to your healthcare practitioner. Certainly, there's a lot of resources now. You can do your research and see what's there. By and large, natural products are used safely every day. At the same time, people do need to, you know, really take the appropriate steps and make sure they've got a good reason as to why they're using them.
Right. And you know, something that might be natural and safe for some person is not necessarily for the other if they're already on medications.
Certainly.
Or if they have a particular health problem. So.
Yeah, they've got to definitely check with their physician or healthcare practitioner on that and go from there. I mean, things like grapefruit are known to interact with, you know, 40 plus different pharmaceuticals. And so, you know, I think we can all say grapefruit is natural and relatively safe, but when used in combination, you know, there may be other challenges. But those challenges aren't really due to the grapefruit, more likely due to the use of the other things. But having that information there and discussing that information is really critical.
Right. So it's communicate, communicate, communicate.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the best policy.
Now, the NPA has a seal of compliance. Explain that to us. How did it come about? What do you use it for?
Well, we've got a few. The first one we have is our CGMP seal of compliance. Back in 1999, before the FDA had a federal standard for CGMPs, which are manufacturing practices, you know, they're really having the basic manufacturing practices in place. The association thought it was smart for consumer confidence to get, you know, to get those standards out there and in the hands of consumers and really show that, hey, this is an important thing to the consumers to make sure that what's in the product is on the label. And we've been doing that since 1999. It's been very successful. We also have a natural certification program, which was to give it meaning in the marketplace. You walk into a store, you see natural pretty much everywhere. But what does it mean? And I think that that's really where we wanted to give the consumers a real easy tool where they could know their purchase had integrity and they felt good about it. They felt like they were really doing something, whether it was because they thought, you know, they didn't want their children exposed to synthetic chemicals or they wanted to do something positive for the environment. We wanted to really support that sort of a purchase.
Okay, and so you've got the two different seals?
Yeah.
All right. And people can go on your website to find out what those seals mean.
What the seals mean, products that carry them, manufacturers that carry them. So there's a lot of good information there. Very easy to access, divided by product category too for natural. So if you want a natural lipstick or a natural toothpaste or sunscreen, it's all right there at the touch of your fingertips.
So under the natural seal, they can find out all of those products. So you cover a broad range of products, like you've mentioned lip balm to... Just give us an idea of some of the things that your members produce.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for natural personal care, it ranges from, you know, cosmetics, makeup, to, you know, toothpaste, you know, dietary supplements, obviously, natural organic foods. It's really the whole marketplace and you know, really people looking at their well-being from a natural perspective in a real holistic manner. So anything you find at your independent health food retailer, you know, generally are folks that not necessarily we've certified everything, but those are the sorts of products you'll see on our website.
So how many of your members have got products that are certified?
We've certified to date for natural about 1,200 products, so about 900 finished products, about 400 ingredients. And that's been the neat part is the ingredients, because the ingredients go everywhere. So, you know, really looking at things that have a technical effect, whether it's a scent or a flavor, and that, you know, is no longer dependent on petrochemical technology is really cool to see and, you know, really helps the marketplace overall.
Absolutely. There's more from Dan after the break, and we hear the end of Nathan's story, so don't go away. And we're back. Nathan had kidney stones causing him severe pain. He needed all kinds of invasive treatment, but he also used herbal products.
I'm certainly drinking a lot more water, even though I'm not one who drinks soda or other beverages, primarily water, maybe some juice. But I have increased my intake of water, and I'm not doing all-nighters or late-nighters anymore. I do believe that the taxing of my system by staying up late really contributed a lot to the detrimental effects on my kidneys' health. So when my kidney stones were analyzed, it was determined that they were high in oxalate, and there is a lot of oxalate content in spinach. And so in reflecting on that, I realized I'd been drinking a lot of spinach by green smoothies every day. And so I've cut down on the number of green smoothies. But I think also in consulting with the doctor that the green smoothies aren't as problematic if I'm staying hydrated. So I have cut down, I still have them, but it's more important to keep that water flushing the system. One of the things that I found was very helpful was to do that flush, and I plan to do it on a regular basis, probably once or twice a year. I use products that are specifically designed. It comes in a kit for kidney and bladder detox, and it involves using herbal teas and certain herbal products that are mixed with juices and a lot of fluid intake. It also is helpful when I do that. I cut down on foods until I'm in a fast. You don't have to do that, but it's helpful to fast when you're doing it to help the body. I think those products and doing that just helps your body to help heal itself. I'm very thankful that I did have the care of a urologist who could help me in this critical time. Had I not gone to the doctor and seen, gotten the help that I needed, I perhaps could have died. I mean, my kidney was completely blocked. The ureter was blocked and the kidney was swelling. And so I definitely needed the medical attention that I got at that time. But I also think it's a blessing to be able to supplement that and to make some changes in my lifestyle and then use herbal and natural products to help improve the health of my kidneys.
And that is what some people call integrative medicine, the integration of a healthy lifestyle with appropriate conventional medicine and natural products to achieve a good outcome. Now back to our conversation with Dan Fabricant regarding labelling and certification. I asked him if consumers can be sure about organic labelling of foodstuffs.
If it's USDA organic, you should really rest assured that it is. USDA organic is by law. USDA passed those laws starting in the 80s, and they really, you know, they've got a lot of integrity and they really mean something to the consumer. One of the challenges with organic, though, tying back into natural, is you can only have so much organic. There's always going to be a lot more natural in the marketplace just because of biomass concerns and things like that. But if you see USDA organic, you can rest assured that it is organic.
All right. Now, come to this tricky topic of genetically engineered food.
Yes.
And how sure can we be if, like, I go to my Asian supermarket, I buy tofu, and almost every box, the manufacturer says non-GMO soy. How sure can I be that that really is non-genetically engineered?
Without a federal standard in place, I think it's a little tough to do. Soy, corn, beets, cotton, papaya are some of the commodities that, you know, are very heavily reliant on GM seed stock. So I think with that understanding, you know, when you see any of those products like soy, tofu, more than likely it's probably from GM. But that doesn't mean that it's unhealthy, it's unsafe. I think, you know, the federal governments have said by and large that there's not a risk there with it, but I think consumers are kind of at an impasse in terms of what information they want and why they want it.
Right, because there's never been this type of genetic engineering. I mean, we've done hybridization, mm-hmm. but it is a little different, isn't it?
Sure, and it, part of it's the art of the term, genetic engineering versus genetically modified. I mean, you can make the argument that a lot of things are genetically modified.
Hybridization.
Right, through hybridization. So it really depends on how you look at the technology and the endpoints of the technology. I think there's got to be a lot more discussion on it. The government's chosen to use the term genetically engineered. I think what's in the public domain is genetically modified. So at some point, there's going to have to be a clear-cut definition of what genetically modified is, so everyone's on the same page.
So what's your take on genetically modified products generally?
I mean, I think by and large, there's some concerns with food shortages and things like that, that it may fulfill a need. I think that consumers, you know, when they're armed with or informed with the right information, they'll make decisions in the marketplace that either support the use of GM crops or not. I think it's widely used in the food supply given the commodities it is already. So what are the concerns people have? What are they about? Are they about the safety? Are they about they just don't like the optics of it? I think when we have some clearer language on what it is, hopefully we'll get to the bottom of some of those discussions.
And I think one of the big issues is that Roundup Ready soy, for example, that will definitely have Roundup used on those crops because that's what it was designed for.
Right.
And Roundup is not something that you really want to be ingesting. So it depends, I think, a little bit on what that genetic modification was originally put in the crop for.
Sure, I think that's it. And also, you know, really looking at things in the totality for their safety profile and what have you. I mean, consumers, I think when they get that information, they'll vote with their feet, so to speak.
Do you think we'll get that information in the short to medium term, though?
I think so. I think it's got to happen. I think there's enough interest. Also, you have states introducing their own labeling laws and things like that I think will really drive the federal process to move, to spur that forward so consumers, you know, feel like they have the right information at hand. I think there's a lot of good information out there already. We certainly have a lot on our website on GM to try to debunk some of the myths because there are some myths. I think people sometimes take both sides to the extreme, and we want to avoid that. We want to take the emotion out of the conversation and really, you know, see what's what and why it matters to people.
So what are your members' views? Are they tending to, I imagine Natural Products Association members must be tending towards the non-GM.
We have a strong constituent that's that way. We also have a strong constituent that's the other way, I think, because some of the methods for evaluating whether or not something's GM are, I think the science may not be perfect there either. We don't have a time machine. We don't have the Adam and Eve of corn, if you will. So how do you compare what's genetically modified to what's not? I think there are some challenges there as well as what's the original seed stock? And, you know, are we talking about something that blew into somebody's cornfield? Are we talking about, you know, deliberately something being engineered to make a modification of a different genetic trait? So I think some of that still needs to be worked out and put into the public domain to where we can have a better conversation about it. So we have members on both sides, and I think, you know, what we want to see is, what both want to see is good information out there.
Absolutely. So who do you think will do the studies?
Well, I think some of them have already been done. I think some of it is boiling some of the information down to consumers to where they understand. And also having a federal law so everyone's speaking of the same, you know, speaking of genetically modified with, okay, this is what it means. We talked about organic before. You know, organic means a lot of different things because there's a regulation. It means control on pesticides. It means control on the water table, on how to use fertilizer, things like that. So I think, you know, genetically modified isn't just one thing. It's not this silver bullet. It's a bit more of a articulate discussion, and we want to make sure it has a real definition to it.
Although you mentioned some of the 7 to 9 crops that are classically defined as genetically modified in this country. So that was based on what is called genetically engineered, or?
Yeah, I think it's based on that and kind of what the concept of genetically engineered is, by and large, and just modern agronomy, modern farming. I think we've probably all eaten GM corn, you know, when we've had a tortilla chip and things like that. So, but again, if we don't have an exact standard as to what that GM is, well, then maybe my supposition isn't correct. So I think we need to weed through some of that first.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Really appreciated having your expertise, and want to wish you well in your new role.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hope to be back soon.
Before you choose a dietary supplement, consider the pros and cons of each product and whether they're right for you. Use the right dose for the right time. Good manufacturing practices are regulated in some countries, but not in others. So know where your natural products are made. And if there are sensational claims, especially in relation to bodybuilding, sexual enhancement, or weight loss products, then there's a chance that they could be adulterated or mislabeled. Be mindful of the possible interaction with medications that you take, and always check with your healthcare provider or pharmacist for interactions between drugs and natural products. The same holds true with procedures and surgery. With all that said, there's good research being done on many natural products that show them to be safe and effective. So, like Nathan, be open to using them. And you too can achieve a good outcome with ongoing health and wellness. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.